This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Emily Esterson from Coverside Magazine, the magazine of mounted fox hunting.
And I'm Tara Tibbetts from Fort Worth, Texas, and you're listening to the monthly fox hunting episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Thursday, December 19th, 2019, episode 2334. This episode is brought to you by Coverside Magazine. Good morning, horse world. This is our special once-a-month episode about fox hunting. We come to you the third Thursday of each month, so put it on your calendar if you're a fox hunting junkie and follow us every month.
And coming up on today's show, Lydia Schrader talks about her fox hunting collection, and Sarah Isherwood tells the tale of how she ended up hunting a Friesian. Plus, we enjoy a little fox hunting-inspired Christmas poetry.
So, Tara, what have you been up to? I know you have a little bit of a cold, but tell us what you've been doing lately.
Well, as per is typical with a fox hunter, and much to my husband's chagrin, is the cold did not stop me from fox hunting. I've had a plethora of Christmas parties in the last week, and so I did Christmas party, fox hunt, and then went to a fox hunting friend's Christmas party, but we had Brazos Valley. I've actually been staying home, so I've been hunting with Brazos Valley since I think our opening was the second weekend in November. We just have had a good season. It's been really nice weather, thankfully. It's gotten a little chilly a couple of times, but great hunting weather, and we've had guests pretty consistently every weekend, which has been fun. It's been fun introducing some new people to fox hunting. Kelly Wilson, who I can't remember if she's been on Horses in the Morning, but she writes the Hunky Hanoverian blog, and she came out with us this past weekend. So nothing too crazy. We are hunting this coming Saturday, the 21st, and a few of us are going to bling out our horses in some ridiculous Christmas decorations and braids and whatnot. I just have been told I can't put bells on anything.
So do you guys do a Boxing Day meet? Because, you know, that's a big tradition in England is Boxing Day, and everybody comes out and they come out in the village. And in the U.S., it's not so much of a tradition, but some hunts do it. So I didn't know if you guys do a Boxing Day hunt, which is actually the day after Christmas.
I know that we haven't since I've been hunting, but some of the people who've been hunting with Brazos Valley much longer than I have said that they used to do that. And so we're contemplating maybe seeing if we could get Sandy to go out this year, but it just kind of depends on what she's got going on with family and whatnot with the holidays. Sandy's our huntsman. But not necessarily traditionally. I think last year on our December episode, I feel like we talked to Ashley Hubbard about it.
We did.
In Green Spring Valley. Because I feel like the hunts who have like an Irish or an English huntsman tend to maybe go out more on Boxing Day for obvious reasons.
I think that might be true. Although I think Casa Ladrone is going to go out on Boxing Day this year. I have been, even though I haven't been active in the hunt this month due to being sick myself and all kinds of work issues and all kinds of stuff happening, I did get a fixture card alert that we were going to hunt on the 26th. So then that's Boxing Day. So that's unusual for us because it's a Thursday, I think, and we usually don't go out on Thursdays. So I think they are going to do that this year. So,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So that is fun. It's fun. So what is on your fox hunting Christmas list? That's what I want to know.
My fox hunting Christmas list actually is a breastplate from Bartville Harness.
I have one of those.
Do you order from them ever?
I do. I have all kinds of things from Bartville. I have a bridle. I have a breastplate. I have two bridles, two flat hunting bridles. And you know, the interesting thing, I don't know if our listeners may not be familiar with Bartville, but they're in Pennsylvania and they are run by an Amish family. And so it's paper catalog ordering. I don't know if, do they have a website? I don't even think they have a website.
No.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And they were an advertiser and they still are of Coverside. And they have been for forever and ever. And yeah, they're very non-technical. So old fashioned.
Well, it's kind of gotten to where the Bartville Harness catalog every year is kind of like when I was a kid and you'd get the JCPenney Christmas catalog.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a paper girl. I like to have a catalog and touch it and circle the things that I want and all that. And you have to save the Bartville catalog cause they're not going to send another one until next year.
Yeah.
But the quality is really great. You know, service is lovely. It's, you know, you order cashier's check and checks only. So I just like the process. It's kind of refreshing to have something old school, but you know, their products are fantastic and their prices are absolutely unbeatable.
And seriously, so, the craftsmanship is incredible. I love leather work. You know, some women like shoes, some women like purses. I like leather and I love bridles. And I have like 20 bridles. And
is that your Christmas list?
Yeah, my Christmas list is a new bridle for Lucy, and she needs one.
A hunt bridle or an eventing bridle?
An eventing bridle for now, because I have two really nice hunt bridles from Bartville. Nice. But she needs an eventing bridle because she needs, she has a weird head. She has like she's little, you know, she's 15 hands, but she has like a big forehead. And so a cob size bridle doesn't actually fit her. So I have to kind of do assembly kind of things where I get a brow band that's horse sized and cheek pieces that are cob sized. So, so I'm going to try to figure that out this year for her to have a fancy eventing bridle. So
very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the term of the month that I picked, this is one that I don't feel like you hear it a ton, but I thought it was kind of interesting, is pick up, where the huntsman picks up the hounds or lifts them to move them to another cover or to go home. And this is one that I think is always, it's really impressive to watch the huntsman pick up the hounds.
I agree. It's kind of a sign of the biddability of the hounds or how biddable they are. When he can, you know, call them up or blow his horn and they all pick their heads up and they get in line and follow right along with the huntsman to go wherever he takes them. And I think that's a very impressive thing to see when you're out hunting, is when the huntsman picks up the hounds. That's very cool.
Well, like I know when we were in Montana last spring, that was one thing that the huntsman felt, you know, she really wanted that we were hunting on a property of a landowner that they'd never hunted on before. And she really wanted the landowner to see how well behaved and controlled the hounds were. So she picked them up at the trailers and we hacked out like about 2 or 3 miles before she cast them out to go hunt. And it was really impressive to watch that. And she did the same thing when we came back in. And I think it really did make an impression on the landowner.
Yeah. That is a comment that I get, that we get, you know, hunts get frequently when people who see a pack of hounds working, who are not really familiar with how hounds are trained or what they're supposed to be doing, to see how you can actually control a pack of 26 or 30 or 40, you know, hounds all at once. And I was just telling this story to somebody the other day. They were asking me about rattlesnakes, because we're in the desert and in the summertime we do have rattlesnakes. And when we're out on hound exercise, we're always kind of alert for them, because in our territory, there's been a few days when we've seen multiple rattlesnakes. And so, and that's only on hound exercise and not during hunt season, because of course it's way too cold for snakes during hunt season. So we don't ever see them. So don't be shy about coming out to New Mexico and hunting, because you will not see rattlesnakes in the winter. However, I was just telling somebody how we were, you know, trotting up the trail and, our first whip was in the front and I was in the drag position and we had, you know, all of our hounds out. So, you know, 12 and a half couple of hounds. And she yelled, "Snake." And then she said, "Hounds right." And hounds all turned right and went off the trail. And somebody who was new to hunting was out with us. And she was like, "That was really quite amazing that happened, that all those hounds ignored that snake and turned right." And that's
pretty impressive.
It was pretty impressive. And that's what, you know, that's a sign of being biddable. And, you know, the same thing would happen if she was to pick them up at a cover. So to get back to the term of the month. Anyway.
Yes. So what's going on at the MFHA?
So we are working
cover
on...
Cover side, I should ask you.
Yeah. So we're working on we just published our winter gift guide, which included some really cool things, including beautiful stock pin, a fox purse, some cold weather gear. So we just published that. And then coming up in the next issue, we have two fantastic stories that I'm really excited about. One is about the rising from the ashes of the Tan Heath hunt, which is also in New England. And later in the show, we'll hear from Sarah Isherwood, who's with Wentworth, another New England hunt. But Tan Heath was pretty much dying. You know, there were like 8 members and they hardly ever went out. And they have resurrected themselves and they have made a great hunting community there in Connecticut. So that's a really great story. It's kind of a long story. It has a lot of ups and downs and loss of territory and a change from live hunting to drag hunting and all kinds of things that they did to reinvigorate. And so that's a great story coming up. The other one is this really cool story that was inspired by both our hunt and some chat on Facebook about technology in the hunt field. And we're not talking about hound collars because a lot of hunts use those. We're talking about things like apps and like, what do you use your app for? And there are these apps out there where you can actually see what your horse's heart rate is and how quickly they recover. And it's really good info for making sure your horse is fit enough. So we have a nice big story on that stuff. So really interesting technology in the hunt field. It's a little bit ironic because it's such a traditional sport and to have technology sneaking in is kind of interesting. So.
But it certainly does make a difference. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it's really fun to see where you went and how far and how fast and where you trotted, where you cantered, where you galloped, where you walked, you know, the track you followed. I think it's super interesting to see that. So, good. So, we are going to talk now with Lydia Schrader, who is the artist at LydiaMarieElizabeth.com. And she does these lovely fox hunting art prints through Middleburg. Her subject is the Middleburg area, and they're really spectacular. And so we're going to talk to Lydia.
We're excited today to be chatting with Lydia from Lydia Marie Elizabeth, who is an artist and has recently released a very, I think, exciting collection of fox hunting themed art. So Lydia, welcome. And if you would start by telling us a little bit about, I know you and I've chatted very briefly, but your background isn't really what folks might think for someone who did a fox hunting collection. So kind of tell us your background and how you came to do this collection.
Yeah, for sure. Well, firstly, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on your podcast. I've been catching up and listening to some of your podcasts, and they're great and very informational for me. So I grew up in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is known as Hunt Country, Virginia. But I actually never really rode. And like my friends were involved with horses and rode, but I didn't. I just played with the Breyers horses growing up. And I had sketched them when I was little because they had always kind of been a muse for me. But yeah, I think the only time I've actually ever ridden was like a time when my family and I went into like the Grand Canyon and they were like, "Oh, we should go horseback riding." And we were like, "Okay." But horses have always been a muse for me, and it's always been a wonderful thing to see them, you know, growing up in the region.
I know we talked about the school, I think, that you went to on a previous podcast. What's the name of the school that you painted?
Yeah, so I went to Notre Dame Academy, which is now Middleburg Academy, and that's kind of fixed in Middleburg, Virginia, which is kind of where this collection takes root, and kind of where the muse for the whole collection came from. Just going back and forth to school there, I would be like in the hunt country. And so I painted Middleburg Academy of Mary House. And I also painted the Foxcroft School, which is also another well-known school in the area, and kind of fixtures in the local vernacular, I guess.
So tell us a little bit. This is Emily, and I am just looking. I have your website up on my other screen, and I'm just looking at your beautiful pieces, and they really capture the sort of feeling of Middleburg and the feeling of hunting and the movement of the horses. And that's a really unusual thing for somebody who doesn't ride and hunt. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about sort of, do you go out and watch hunts with your sketchbook? Like, how do you actually create these pieces that sort of spring from your imagination? I'd really love to hear about that process.
Yeah. Well, I guess the start of the collection, you know, came from growing up in the area, but also it kind of came from two collaborations that I was working on with some other businesses. So Townsend Art Outfitters came to me and wanted me to do some branding for them. And they do like sporting and active wear. And one of their collections that they wanted me to illustrate was their equestrian collection. So they actually had me illustrating horses, and I was kind of looking at photos and my own photos and other people's photos of horses and how they move and their shapes. And they are just such beautiful creatures. So I think that collaboration was really pivotal in me understanding the horse's movements. But years of being in art classes will definitely give you an advantage, I think, of like knowing what to look for when it comes to, you know, just starting looking at an object and knowing, how shapes interact with one another. But they are beautiful creatures, and I loved depicting them in this collection.
So do you work mostly off photographs, or do you actually go out and sketch things? Like, I'm looking, I see like this beautiful piece of Morven Park with the riders and the hounds running across the lawn and you know, the jumper and all these different sort of beautiful scenes.
Yeah. So mostly I am out in these places, and I take photographs and come back to my studio and work from there. So all of these scenes are actual places in Middleburg. The jumper is right on Route 15, and there's an alley of trees that is right on Route 50. So they are places that I've kind of studied in real life, that I've, you know, taken some photos from and kind of work from my memory and from those photos. I think that for me, when it comes to depicting a place, I think that my memory and my my memory of the experience in the place is pivotal when I'm depicting, you know, the colors of shadows and the joy in a place. And I think that I definitely relied on that in this collection. There's also the Friends at the Stable piece, which shows a stable with some dogs kind of like crowding around a horse. So those stables are based on my high school stables, which when I was going there were not working stables. But this is kind of a great example of like how I see a place and how it kind of like triggers my imagination to imagine like a horse meeting its friends at the stable.
So that piece was kind of out of your imagination, like the architecture. I'm looking at it right now. It's kind of the architecture mm-hmm. of the stable with the horse and hound speaking in a Dutch door. And so mm-hmm. so it was your imagination that put the hounds and the horses in the scene.
Yeah. I mean, so I worked from like several different photographs for this piece, like for the placement of the dogs and, or the hounds, excuse me. I've just given myself away as not a fox.
We forgive you.
yeah. So I was studying several different photographs for this, but, yeah. So I guess the long answer is that it's kind of a mishmash of things, but my imagination brought like, oh, it would be really cute to have some dogs at the stable door and kind of imagine the story and the scene from an experience that I had in real life at a place.
Mm. I love that. That's one of my absolute favorites because I have 11 dogs, and so that could easily be my house.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In one of the podcasts I listened to, you were like joking at how many dogs you had. I didn't catch how many you have, but that's so many. That's so fun.
It fluctuates a little bit because I foster. I said, that was one of my favorites. But so how many pieces are in the Hunt collection? Is it like 15?
Oh my gosh. I have to count 3, 6, 9, 12, 15.
It's a pretty robust collection.
Yeah. And then I have some black and white sketches that I added to the collection to just kind of round out and show you like even more like a rough behind the scenes of these horses and like how I kind of, you know, struggled or didn't struggle with like parts of the horse and just like capturing the composition and kind of deciding what scenes to do. So yeah, there are a lot of pieces in this collection.
Well, I kind of where I was going with that was how do you determine it? Do you just kind of go until you feel like you've mm-hmm. painted everything that you feel like you want to paint in that subject? Or, you know, do you kind of have like I want to get this many in the collection or how does that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess with this collection, I was up against a deadline. So I kind of set my own deadlines. And for this, we had the collection launch at the Red Fox Inn in Middleburg. And I was making sure that I would have everything done for that launch. And however much I got done by that date is however many pieces were in the collection. But I did, you know, I did do a couple pieces that didn't make the collection. But these were kind of my favorites that I did. So I guess I'm always working like till the last minute. It's just my personality and how I kind of work. So this is probably my most robust collection because I was so excited about it. But I mean, most of my collections will have at least 8 to 10 pieces.
So is that show up at the Red Fox now?
No, it's come down now.
If people wanted to see the work in person, is there a gallery or a place where they could see it?
Not currently. It's just online right now. It's just
online. Are you planning on doing more hunt work? Pieces?
Yes, I am. The launch went so well and we had such a great response from it. We're hoping to maybe if it's not an annual thing, maybe we'll do like every 2 years we'll do a collection launch in Middleburg because I think after doing this collection, I just realized how much I enjoyed depicting the region and the foxes and the hounds and the horses. I connect with them so much. I think like the foxes and the hounds, they all have their own little personality. And they're just so much fun to create. And, you know, they sell well too. So my audience like connects with it. So yeah, I would definitely say in the future, you'll see more hunt collection.
Okay, so more questions about the art process. So
yeah,
did you study any equine or canine anatomy? And I'm asking this question because my mom was a sculptor, and she, and also a watercolorist, and she, you know, she was not a horse person, and she tried for years and years to do a horse sculpture for me, and she did beautiful people. Her people are fantastic, but she could never get the horses right. And so she kept taking these horse anatomy books and from me, and like veterinary, I have like the veterinary anatomy book, and she like borrowed it from me so she could learn horse anatomy. She never quite got it right. But I was just wondering if you did any studying of anatomy to inform your drawing.
Oh gosh. I mean, honestly, I think the studies that I did were all these black and white sketches. So, and also my work with Townsend Outfitters, they, we kind of worked through like tons of little sketches of horses before I felt like I was capturing the horse, the way I wanted to. And even, I mean, honestly, I think if you look at my horses, they're much taller than I think an actual horse is. So, I mean, I don't necessarily know that it's like perfect or to proper anatomy, but it's certainly like my style of a horse. And sculpture, wow. I definitely respect people so much who are able to do sculpture. I think that's such an impressive talent.
It was funny because she kept getting the hind legs backwards, like the joints were still the wrong way. It was like, and that's why I'm looking at these and she's like, wow, she really gets the essence. You really get the essence of the horse in your pieces. My mom's like, why is this so weird? I'm like, well, the joints are backwards, Mom. The horse's leg's bending the wrong way.
I feel like sometimes like when you look at something too long, it all goes backwards. Like sometimes my paintings, I'm like, I have to like completely start afresh because this is just all wrong. So I totally understand that sentiment.
So has most of the hunt collection sold out? Are you going to, will you do more prints later
Yeah, I actually have several originals still for sale. I've sold a lot of prints for Christmas. Of course, Christmas deadlines are no longer able to be made. All the new prints will sell and be delivered in January. But there are originals for sale on my website. There are a few pieces that sold out, but there's definitely a lot of options on here for those interested.
Well, I definitely know I told my husband that I want at least one of them. So hopefully.
You're so kind. Thank you.
Well, and I want to ask you, we're running out of time here, but you do also do commissions. So if anybody saw your art, because I think you've done a few like front door pieces for Christmas cards is what they look like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. That's really the bread and butter of my business. People usually send me pictures of landscapes or architecture and interiors, and I do commissions for them. So typically I will do 2 to 3 sketches for someone, and then from those concept sketches, I create the final artwork. I work with most of my clients on that relationship.
I love that so much. So if our listeners want to see your art and buy some and commission their next year's Christmas card, how do they find you?
Yeah. On my website at LydiaMarieElizabeth.com. And I also have an Instagram where I'm posting, which is also Lydia Marie Elizabeth.
And that is where I found you. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about your art, and hopefully you completely are sold out from all of our listeners.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure. I really appreciate you, having this conversation with me.
Thanks, Lydia.
So next, we're going to have a little reading of A Tale of a Christmas Eve Fox Hunt, just a portion of it. And this is a a tale that's, it's actually based on a true story from Robert Taylor, the Huntsman of Goshen Hounds, but it was written by James Garrity. So we'll share a link to the full poem. I think it's a poem, right, Emily? It's a poem.
It's a poem, and it's quite long. So we're not going to read the whole thing here on the air.
But in the Christmas spirit, since we're coming out right before Christmas, I'm going to turn it over to Emily to read the first three stanzas, and then you can find the rest of it, which is very exciting and interesting and fun, on the website that'll be in the show notes.
Tale of a Christmas Eve Fox Hunt by James N. Garrity. 'Twas the morning of the hunt when all through the land all the creatures were stirring, for the chase was at hand. Daylight on the crest of a new-fallen snow gave the farmland beyond a lustrous white glow. The field that had gathered this Christmas Eve morn was yearning to start with the huntsman's first horn. The horses and riders were turned out with care in the hope that old Renard would be raised from his lair. The master of the hunt mingled in the churchyard's front court, while the riders were treated to sherry and port. The children were on their ponies groomed well. The thrill of the hunt was theirs too, I must tell. Then the huntsman appeared in his red coat so quick, for a moment I thought that it must be Saint Nick. His hounds were well-heeled, yes, a good-looking pack. Well-behaved, a bit keen from their long kennel hack. For the rest of the poem, you can find it on ecoverside.net. Scroll down to Tale of a Christmas Eve Fox Hunt. And if you're looking for this story later and it's not on the front page, just go to the search bar and type Tale of a Christmas Eve Fox Hunt, and the rest of the story will come up. So now we're going to welcome Sarah Isherwood, who hunts with Wentworth in New Hampshire. And Sarah hunts a Friesian. So we're going to talk to her about her great experience with this breed. So we're here with Sarah Isherwood, and Sarah hunts with Wentworth, which I believe is in New England. And we wanted to have Sarah on because she's, her horse is the focus of our Field Hunter feature coming up in Coverside Magazine. And our Field Hunter feature, usually we always try to focus on a kind of unusual breed of horse that's in the hunt field. And so Sarah, I thought, would make a great guest because she is hunting a Friesian, which is pretty unusual. And when I read the story, I thought, okay, I really need to get Sarah on the show. So, Sarah, tell us about your horse and how you came upon him or her. Can't remember now. And
it's Mitch. She's a mare.
She's how you came across her and your kind of fox hunting story with her.
Okay. Well, I fell in love with Friesians when the Just About Horses magazine did an issue on them in the, I think, mid 1990s. And they were like just up and coming, fat, new breed, very fancy, very expensive. And I was a, you know, late high school, early college kid, didn't have the money for one, but it was a dream of mine to own one. So when I graduated college, I started working at a Friesian barn through a strange series of events as their barn manager and trainer. And so I got, you know, some firsthand experience with this breed that I'd become enamored with from a distance. I got to actually, you know, ride them and train them and show them. And Dache was actually born there. So Dache's dam was imported as a four-year-old, and she was imported in foal with Dache as the result. And so I rode her mother the day before she foaled. We went on a walking trail ride. That horse was really special to me. I didn't get to do a whole lot with her. Because she was pregnant the whole time she was there. But she was a really, really nice mare and easy to work with and a lot of fun to be around. So Dachi was born at the farm. She was actually sold in utero. So I never even considered buying her. I mean, she was just another horse at the barn that I was there to take care of. And, you know, this adorable little baby, she came out with a crinkled ear. So she had one ear folded down and the other one standing up. And just a little peanut of a thing. And So I was actually there at the barn the day she was born. I wasn't there for the birth, but I was there the day she was born. And a tragic turn of events, her dam actually colicked. Dache wasn't even a month old and she colicked. And so I wasn't at the farm that day, but I got a phone call from the barn owners that they had the mare loaded up and they were taking her to the clinic for colic surgery, for the possibility of colic surgery. And Frisians don't do well with anesthesia. And this was actually the situation with this mare, is that she actually never made it to the table, because when they anesthetized her for the surgery, she died on the table. Mm-hmm. So the little filly was there by herself now, with no mom. So she was paired up with a miniature donkey as a companion. And I've always said this is why Dacha is so strange, because she was kind of raised by a mini donkey. and they're a little different. Oh, goodness. But anyway, so I got to name her. I picked her name. The farm let me name her because they didn't know what to call her. So what I did was I Google searched Dutch baby names. And the way Frisians are named, it has to be a particular letter for the year of their birth. And her letter year was D, E, or F. And I thought Dacha looked really nice on paper. And it was kind of a pretty name. Some Dutch names are a little awkward. And it means precious one or little one or something like that. So I set up her bottle feeding schedule and.
But you still didn't own her yet, right?
No. No, so this was still all just part of my job, taking care of the farm and organizing the care of the animals that they had there. So I kind of like orchestrated the bottle feeding crew, so she was fed around the clock. And I didn't live there, so the friends and family of the barn owners took turns, and everybody was feeding her around the clock. So how I ended up with Dacha, her buyers backed out. So when the mare died about a month later, the farm owners told me that their buyers had backed out and that if I was interested, of course, that they would allow me to buy her if I wanted her. So of course I didn't have to think very hard. So that fall, so she was born in February and I took her home in September of 2001. And so that's how I ended up with my first Frisian.
How did you end up fox hunting her?
Aha. So this was really interesting because I had never fox hunted. Okay. My background was a quarter horse hunter under saddle when I was a kid. And then I did dressage and eventing right through college. And so I was actually attending a Tom Davis clinic. So Dacha had done some dressage through her. I started her as a 4-year-old. And by the time she was 6-7, we were doing some dressage. And I really like over fences work. So dressage is really important, but I get the biggest thrill out of galloping across the countryside and jumping fences. So, and Dacha was she was difficult to train. I think being an orphan, being raised by a donkey, being a mare and being a Frisian all worked like to be the perfect storm of a very stubborn partner.
I also have an orphan and she is very stubborn. So I feel you.
Yeah. So I was like, I was at my wit's end and my dressage instructor, you know, had taken us as far as I could. You know, I did not have a riding arena. I was schooling in my field and I could only take lessons once a week and all that. So I was seeking to do something different. So I wanted to get her going over fences and she was kind of a chicken out cross country by herself. So I wanted to take her I'd heard great things about Tom Davis and he had some clinics in the area. And so I took one with him and I really liked his style. So we did quite a few more. And I believe this was when Dacha was 7 and 8 years old. So her 7th to 8th year, we were clinicking with Tom Davis. And one of the clinics, he made the off-the-cuff suggestion to me that my mare needed to be more worldly and he thought I should take her fox hunting. And I was like, what? What do you mean? So it kind of piqued my interest because I thought it sounded like I'd never done it. And I was really interested in it. And so I did some research. I knew nothing about it. And it was very intimidating because, you know, there's a lot of protocol and there's a lot of, you know, tradition. And I wanted to, I didn't want to be the oddball who didn't know what they were doing. So anyway, I found Wentworth, a local hunt to me. So they're based out of, the kennels are actually in Lee, New Hampshire, which is 45 minutes from my house. And I called the secretary and I explained that I was brand new and I wanted to, you know, try out fox hunting. And so they hooked me up with a good fixture that I could try to start. I think it was probably cubbing season when I started her. And we just showed up, didn't know anybody, and tacked up and had a blast. I mean, she was really good right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So she just sort of fell into it. She was like, okay.
Yep. Yep. She loved following the leader. I mean, of course, in Hilltop, you don't get to see the hounds work very, very closely. Mm-hmm. But, you know, trail riding, she was very familiar with already. And she just loved following the leader. And then, you know, as time went on, and we got to move up to second field, and then there were quite a few years where we were hunting in first field. I know we're Frisian in first field, but and to watch the hounds work, I mean, once she got to learn what they were doing, you can see it in her. When she sees them come off the trailer, you know, she's immediately at attention and she knows why we're there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her reaction when they strike the line, she just loves, she's kind to them too. She likes the hounds. She's, mm-hmm. I mean, if she were more athletic, she'd be the perfect fox hunter.
Mm-hmm. And so, are you still doing some eventing with her?
Actually, the funny thing, once I tried fox hunting, I gave up trying to event her because the few schooling events I did do with her, it's like pulling teeth getting her to leave the start box.
Oh.
She's just not a fan of going off into the unknown by herself at speed. Oh. She'll go anywhere to walk. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to
sometimes
strike off.
That's kind of nice. Jump.
Well, I know. And the older I get, and of course, I have a younger thoroughbred I'm bringing along now, too. And watching her be athletic, I'm just like, oh, wow. Okay. I really appreciate Dacha now.
Well, so I was going to ask, have you ever, because Dacha's 18 now, right?
Yes. Yep.
Have you bred her or have you contemplated breeding her?
Oh, I thought about it over the years. When she was younger, I was really not in the position to, you know, go through the expense. And then I didn't have the facilities to have a second horse. And of course, if I bred her, I'd want to keep the baby.
Right.
And so now that I would be in a position to, I have, you know, a small farmette and my own barn and horses are home with me. She's older. And honestly, if I lost her to foaling or anything related to foaling, I don't know if I could forgive myself for making that decision. So I opted to, instead of breed her, and another, that was the main reason. And the second reason is, you know, I love Dacha, but I also love athletic sports with my horses. And so I don't know if I would get anything with Frisian blood in it for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, because they have a difficulty with the heat, working in the heat. You have to be very careful. They'll pant. You know, if they can't cool themselves off when they're exerting in warm weather. So that makes it difficult. I have to be very conscientious of how much I'm asking her to do, because of how her metabolism is and her physiology. So the pursuit of a more athletic horse as my second horse, and also the fact that I don't want to lose her to foaling or anything related to that.
I do think, you know, I have a very, talented, athletic, lovely Hanoverian who was also orphaned pretty early on. And people keep asking me if I'm going to breed her. She has great bloodlines. And And, you know, and I'm just like, oh no, because I just never want to go through that ever again, you know? So like, yeah. I would, and she's got her own quirks too. Like she's just like, she is just a little different. And I worked really hard on making sure she didn't have any of those weird orphan behaviors, but nonetheless, yep. you know, nonetheless, it's yeah. still not something I ever want to deal with again. And although I love her, she, you know, she does not fox hunt. And because she's yeah. just not confident. So,
yep.
So your thoroughbred you're bringing along, are you thinking about retiring Dacha anytime soon, or is she still going strong?
She is still going strong. I'm going to let Dacha tell me when she's ready to stop. Mm-hmm. The thoroughbred is kind of a, well, she was an experiment. So I didn't get her with the intention of retiring Dacha anytime soon. The thoroughbred is more of a project, and I'm thinking maybe in 5 years she'll probably be ready to start filling Dacha's shoes in some areas. So, you know, Dacha, I'm hoping that I can keep her going well into her 20s. Mm-hmm. Of course, we'll be slowing down. You know, I keep things at a pace that goes along with her physical ability and comfort level.
Yeah.
But she finished the season great this year, and I'm looking forward to hunting her next year as well.
So tell us a little bit about Wentworth. And you're probably already done for the season, right? Because it's kind of messy up there this time of year.
We are, yes. So Wentworth, they have a spring and a fall season. Mm-hmm. So they'll hunt from in May, depending on how, the kind of winter we have and when the footing kind of cleans up a little bit. May and June, they'll hunt, which is lovely. The spring hunting is a lot of fun. And then they take July off and they'll start up cubbing season middle of August. Mm-hmm. And then they'll carry that through. Usually formal season starts the last week of September. And that goes through Thanksgiving or just after Thanksgiving, where they have their diehard hunt, which was so named because I believe one year they did it in a Northeaster. They actually had people show up to hunt in a Northeaster. And then they have the diehard hunt, which is the Saturday after that. And if the weather holds, that'll be the final hunt of the season. And that, I believe, is the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. So they go out twice a week. They go out Wednesdays and Saturdays. And throughout those periods, they'll have fundraisers too. So they'll hold a couple of hunter paces throughout the year. And I believe, I don't know if they held it this year. And I actually managed it for about 8 or 9 years myself, as they have a schooling dressage show in the spring.
So what kind of country is it? Mostly forested? Do you have coops? Is it a live hunt or drag hunt?
It's a drag hunt. Wentworth is a drag hunt. And our territory spans from, we hunt in mainly in southeastern New Hampshire and southeastern Maine. Now we have several territories that are up in Maine, which is a little further for me, but I haven't been to the newest territory in Maine, but the Maine fixtures have a lot of fields. So that's a lot of fun to get out of the woods in the New England granite and get out on some fields for some galloping. Most of our jumps are like fallen trees and stone walls. We have built some coops. Some of the farms that we hunt have coops in the fence lines, and those are always fun. But most of the fixtures we hunt, and we actually have volunteers that will go out and improve the fixtures with building jumps and putting out fun things for people to jump while we're out hunting.
Great. Sounds like a lot of fun. Thank you for being with us, Sarah. We're just about out of time. So we really appreciate it. And we're excited to hear about Dacha and your adventures with Frisians and hunting. And so thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I was very excited to be with you tonight.
Well, that was a great show today. And we are wishing Tara and I, everybody, a fantastic holiday season with lots of great hunting and great riding. Don't forget, you can find Coverside online at ecoverside.net or the digital edition at issuu.com/ecoverside. Tara can be found at Instagram. Just search for TN Tibbetts. Find the links to today's guests in the show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. You can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning.
You can have all of the Horse Radio Network shows with you wherever you go with our free app for iPhone and Android. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. Thank you so much to our sponsor today, Coverside Magazine and the MFHA. Good night.
Good night.